Welcome to Corrittles. This week, Stupid Email Mistakes Chapter 2, Part 2. The questions this cast answers are, what mistakes am I making in my emails? Why are they mistakes? And what should I do instead of sending an email? According to an article I saw this morning, the current hiring market status is weird, as if that's a status. There's thousands of people being laid off, which we've seen, I'm sure you've seen the headlines about. There's also hiring shortages. There's thousands of people being hired. The fact that it's all happening at once is a bit weird. The one thing you need to care about is whether you're getting hired for the job that you want. The rest of the market really doesn't matter. It's all about your performance in the interview that you're going to. And in order to make that the best performance you can, purchase the interviewing series. It's everything we know about interviewing. It's all of the stuff that goes on in that black box and an explanation of how you can use that to be your best and get the job that you want, no matter what the economy is doing. Last week, we talked about considering the communication style of your recipient, of thinking about how other people want to receive messages and making that effective by tailoring your messages to that preference, and about replying too quickly and too slowly and what messages that might send to someone. And now we're going to talk about the fun stuff, at least for a little bit.
Yeah.
Passive-aggressive cliches in emails.
Oh, so good. Everyone sees right through some of these phrases because of their ubiquity and the inherent, or I should say not inherent, the latent snark that's embedded within them. All right, so we've got some phrases like, as per my last email. So good. Or per our last conversation.
Oh, this is one I use and I've stopped using. Friendly reminder, which actually means I'm reminding you because you're an idiot.
Right. Please advise. That's a good one. Noted. Very, very good. Will do.
Yeah, that's the noted one. It's like, yeah, I heard you. I don't like what you said.
Right. I got you. Okay. I know what you're up to. Yes. this is a good one. Thanks in advance. I know you're going to do it, so thanks in advance, right? You don't have an option here. Thanks in advance. Circling back, that's a good one. I think that's an iteration of as per my last email.
Yes, exactly.
Or per our last conversation. As promised.
Yes, I'm doing what I promised you I told you. Like, either you don't keep your promises, but I keep mine, or I didn't want to do this, but I had to.
Right. And then lastly, and really this isn't lastly, there could be probably 100 more.
Yeah.
As discussed.
Yes, which is another, I keep my promises and you don't.
Yeah, that's another, I don't trust you, so I'm putting this in writing.
Yeah. That's true too. And actually, I got this list from the first article on Google when I put in the search passive aggressive email. So, and all of those were completely recognizable and I knew immediately what they meant. And so did you. Everybody knows exactly what you mean by as per my last email. And in fact, if you Google as per my last email meme, you get increasingly sarcastic and rude meanings for that phrase, and they all mean the same thing. It's just how it's expressed, and it's depending on how far you want to go, gets increasingly funny to me.
And there's a reason. There's pages of mugs and t-shirts and all sorts of swag with as per my last email or some of these other phrases on them, right? This is so good.
Yeah. And as with so many insults, particularly in British English, so I'm gonna claim my Britishness now, you can use these phrases in jest between two people who know each other well, or you can use them with a colleague that you've worked with forever. I, you know, Mark and I have worked together for 15 years. And if I send him friendly reminder, he knows. I don't mean it sarcastically. I actually just mean, hey, I'm reminding you and you know I need to remind you. So we're just going to talk about it.
In some cases, he may have asked you to remind
him. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, between two people who know each other well, between friends, you can use insults and the insults don't mean the insulting thing, right? Mm-hmm. But they exist as insults for a reason. And 99% of the time when they're used, they're insults. And look, the workplace is a really frustrating place. There's other people's standards that don't match your own. You have an idea of what should be happening. And when you're frustrated, usually what you think should be happening is not happening. Gosh, I sound like a therapist. but that doesn't mean it's okay to send a barely veiled insult, which is basically what, as per my email, my last email is. So whenever you're tempted to use one of these phrases, just pick up the phone or schedule a video call or walk around to the desk of the person that you're tempted to send it to. And 99 times out of 100, what you discover is an innocent mistake. Someone didn't see your email. They had 100 emails and they just missed it, or they starred it and it isn't there, or they thought they would come back to it later and they didn't. Or there's a misunderstanding of how important it is or what they were supposed to do. Or there's a person that's completely overwhelmed with their workload and or is having some problem with a client or a boss or a customer and is just struggling. And it's so rarely somebody who is deliberately antagonizing you by not answering your email. So rarely. And those people just don't deserve your scorn.
Yeah. I would also just maybe put this into context a little bit. The whole reason that, you know, we're doing this podcast goes back to the two kind of tenets of career tools, right? Results and relationships. And all we're really doing here in terms of talking about some of these mistakes is making sure that these mistakes don't get in the way of those two things, your results and your relationships. And potentially, this could be something that damages relationships if you put these passive aggressive phrases in your emails. And we don't want that for you. We want you to have, because results and relationships really go hand in hand, you have to be able to, at a bare minimum, not screw things up you send your emails. Yes, it would be great if all your emails were perfect and they were, you know, tailored to the audience and it was exactly how you it landed exactly the way you wanted it to. But if we can't get there, we should at least not aggravate people in our emails.
Exactly. And when we called it stupid email mistakes, and they're not stupid as in you have to be stupid to make them. But I think what happens is two things. One, we learn how to do email from other people in our company or the places we work. And other people write as per my last email. And so we do. And we know that it comes across badly, but we don't know we don't know what else to do, which is why we just told you this is the other thing to do, which is not to send an email. And so it's not stupid in the sense that you're doing it deliberately to be stupid or that you have to be dense in order to do it. It's just that a lot of people don't know what the alternative is.
Yeah. Or even the potential impact.
Right. Exactly. People either don't know what the alternative is, or they make this mistake without thinking. Like they just type, as per my last email, because they type 100 emails a day and they're like, what's the fastest? They're not even thinking what's the fastest way to get my message across. It's almost, it goes from their subconscious to their fingers and they don't notice what they're typing. And it's stupid in that sense of like, I'm not thinking this through and the effect that it will have. And so that's why we're telling you all these things that you probably know, but we still make those mistakes, all of us. And it's partly because we don't know any better. And it's partly because we don't know what else to do. And it's partly because we're just not thinking about it hard enough.
Yeah, that's a great point. Our next point is attachments that could be emails. And this is pretty simple. Don't send attachments when the information could be in the body of the email. This is, again, considering your audience, considering where your audience might be getting this email. If they're getting it on their device, if they're getting it on, or sorry, if they're getting it on a mobile device or a tablet or their desktop computer, right? What this does by sending an attachment, if the attachment could be in the body of the email. Some attachments you can't. There, you know, it's not a format that you can. But if you can, putting it in the body of the email makes it so much easier for them to get that information and digest it. And really what this is comes down to is not creating additional work for the person that you're sending that email. Because if you send it as an attachment, depending on the device that they're on, they've got to open it a different way, mm-hmm. right? You know, every device caches attachments differently. And so they've got to click on it, but maybe it pulls up and it's pulling up in their email client. So they can't look at anything else. Maybe they look at that data and now they go, oh, I just got another email on this. Let me look at that. But now they've got to close that. And that means they've got to reopen it again. Mm-hmm. If they're on their desktop, it might be a little bit easier.
But you still got to, like, if there's an Excel sheet, you've got to download it. And then you go wait for Excel to open. You got to wait for it to open the file. And it's just work.
Yeah. And so if you want something from someone else, and by the way, rarely do we send an email where we don't want something, even if it's just for them to have read and noted the contents of the email, then it behooves you to make giving you what you want from them as easy as possible for
them. Right, exactly.
That's what this is all about.
So to go back to bashing insurance companies and upsetting Amanda, like think about how difficult they make it to do something simple like cancel your account or your policy. You know, cable companies are renowned for this, right? You know that they're doing that in their own interest. If they can make you call during specific hours, either they have the chance to talk you out of it, which is mm-hmm. what the cable company always does, or they can put you off making a change at all. If they make the hours between 10 and 2 on alternate Thursdays, the likelihood of you paying it for another month because you don't have the time during that specific time to call is high. And so part of the reason we're frustrated when we see this is because we know they're doing it in their own interests and not in ours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, those cable companies. Oh, sorry, cable company. People who work at cable companies. But I will tell you, the number of times I've called and said, yeah, I want to cancel or whatever. And then they go, oh, well, we happen to be running a special where we're going to pay you to have cable for 3 months. And I go, what?
Yeah. So why didn't you just
I'm
tell
exaggerating.
Me about that?
But where was that? How come that wasn't? Oh, it's just for special, meaning it's just for customers that are calling to cancel.
Exactly.
Right? And it's just our way of kicking the can down the road and hoping you forget again.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, frustrating.
You should see Andrew's face. It's funny. You know they're doing it in their own interest. And that's why it's so frustrating for us. And the same can be thought of you if you make it more difficult for someone to take the action that you want them to take. It's in your interest not to do the work of cutting out those like 5 cells that is the 5 that they need to read and putting it into the email because it saves you work, but it adds to the work of the recipient and that doesn't dispose them to think of you kindly. When you do that, when you're attaching something that could be in the body of the email, just think about those cable companies and having to call them to cancel. That's what you're doing to the other person and that will stop. Hopefully
yeah,
that will stop you ever
person.
doing it, because nobody wants to be that guy, right?
Exactly.
For all of our clients who have people working outside of the US or simply have workforces who are not geographically located together, who are spread out across the country, and on-site training, us coming to you doesn't make any sense because there's so many places we'd have to go. You may want to consider virtual training. It's way more economical, obviously, because you don't have to pay travel. We've created client training models with digestible chunks of virtual learning, and we've made them affordable. We can deliver all of our standard client training, so effective manager, effective communicator, and effective hiring managers virtually. And we get amazing feedback about how useful it is, despite the fact that people are learning virtually. To learn more about the price points and benefits for your group, contact Maggie, maggie@manager-tools.com, or read all the details posted on the website, manager-tools.com/organizations.
The next point is sending email off hours. So sending email at off hours causes the recipient to feel obligated to answer in off hours, even if you don't intend this to be true. This is another example of the email sender doing what suits them and not considering what suits their recipient or their audience. Now, I'm probably like many professionals out there who is also a parent, right? My wife and I have three sons, and my wife and I both, depending on what's going on with work and what, you know, what it is, we will occasionally get the kids to bed, and then we've got a little bit of peace and quiet, and sometimes we'll do something, watch a movie or something together, but often what we'll do is we'll do kind of a second shift at work where we'll plug in, we'll check some email, we'll answer some emails after the kids have gone to bed. And I think a lot of professionals do this that I've interacted with. A lot of professionals who are parents do this after the kids go to bed. And sometimes it's in an effort to keep up and make sure that, you know, you can't predict what the morning is going to look like.
Right.
And if one of the kids, you know, has a messy breakfast because they picked the wrong plate
yes,
for their food, right? Then potentially, right, the morning could go awry and we don't start work as fresh and on point as we want to. And so we want to make sure we can do as much as we can to prepare for any inevitability. So we jump on, we do some emails, but there's something about when you're a boss, when you're a manager, when you're a professional who has influence over peers or colleagues, sending email in the evening sends a message to your directs, your colleagues, your peers, that they too should be sending and answering emails in the evenings.
Even if you're a direct, right? And,
yep,
and it's your boss sending and you reply, then all your peers now feel obligated to also reply in the evening.
Yeah. And this is what, when I'm doing the effective manager conference and I'm talking to managers about sending emails off hours, and we don't talk about it a lot, but sometimes it comes up as a question, we'll talk about it. And I say, maybe some of you haven't been an individual contributor for a while, or maybe, you know, you have a great relationship with your boss or maybe your peers or something. But in a lot of work atmospheres that I've been in, when a boss sends an email at 8 p.m., it's a race to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Among the directs, right? Because you want to be the first person to respond and say, hey, I'm all over it, boss. I'm here. I'm, you know, I've got your emails where they ping my phone.
Light up every light in the house.
Yeah, they light up. Yeah, my lights flicker in the house. I've got a red light bulb in the corner that just says, alert, email from boss, right? That's how important you are to me, boss. And so, you know, it's a thing. It's a real thing that happens. And this is how, you know, sometimes I'll have folks in sessions who will say, but Andrew, we have an email culture at mm-hmm. my work and or at our organization, or we're expected to be always on. And this is how those habits, those behaviors are reinforced and how they're formed. Because in most cases, the managers that I talk to, but even professionals who are sending emails, the intention of the sender is usually not, hey, I need you to respond right away.
No, this is convenient for me because my kids are sleeping and I've got some peace and quiet.
Exactly. It's usually, this is when I knew I'd be in a good frame of mind to write this email, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm going to get this email out. And that's usually what it is. Now, saying to someone, because this is usually what managers tell me uh-huh. in sessions, they say, well, I say to my directs, I tell them, hey, just because I'm sending emails off hours, that doesn't mean that you need to answer, right? Oh, I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't fix the problem.
Mm-mm.
That's not, it's almost disingenuous
uh-huh.
or comes across as disingenuous,
yes.
right?
Uh-huh.
Because your directs and your colleagues are saying, well, what am I going to not respond to this?
Exactly.
And, you know,
yeah.
look at this email.
I'm going to let Brian get there first.
Exactly. Yep. So once the email's in their inbox, all professionals, but especially if they're directs of a manager, feel obligated to answer. And instead, what we recommend is use the delayed send function in your email client. Almost every email client has it, I think. I can't think of one that doesn't. If you don't have one, or if you don't have delay send, one, look for it, because it might be there, it just might not be, you know, right there next to send. But if you don't have it, we suggest changing to one that has it, especially if you find yourself where this is you. We're describing you and your kind of work patterns. So using this delayed send feature is a kindness to others. And it's really the mark of a thoughtful boss. And that's what, you know, that's what a lot of bosses want to be. They want to be that thoughtful boss. So that means you have to think through.
Yeah, you have to think through, hey, I'm doing email now because it's convenient to me, but I don't want to send the message that everybody needs to be working right now. And then you need to take an action, and the action is delay the email.
Yeah. And I think there's a chance, Wendy, that there are some parents who are professionals who read this, or read this, if they read it in the show notes or they listen to this, they may rationalize a bit and say, you know, the reason that I do this is, hopefully they'll admit, it's a little selfish, or, you know, it's about them. Because there are times, and I get this, I understand this completely, there are times where I have to, you know, I do get in late because it was a rough morning with the kids, or I have to leave the office early, or one of the kids is staying home sick, and so I'm less productive that day. And I want to be able to showcase that I am offsetting those times by working in these particular situations. The problem is that that's not the appropriate way to communicate that in sending emails, that because emails are by definition for the recipient.
Yes.
Right? And so if the email is for the recipient, it's not about you and you sending it, right? This, I think, is a hallmark of not having those relationships, right? Not having those trusting relationships with your colleagues and boss to be that person who says, or to be that person that people know that they can count on and that you're going to, you know, that you're putting in your hours. This is not going to fix that.
No. And again, we said sending emails is not your job. If you are getting results, you are getting the results that you're supposed to be getting. You're hitting the deadlines you're supposed to be hitting. You're working to the quality standards you're supposed to be working to. It doesn't matter whether you took 2 hours out because you had to go pick up a child and then go to the pharmacy and then settle child in bed and whatever, or not. And whether you make those hours up later or not doesn't matter as much as if you're getting results.
The work product.
Exactly. And so you don't have to prove that you did make up those 2 hours. You just have to make sure you're getting the results. And none of that is about email.
Yep. So that takes us to our next point, which is doing email rather than managing it.
This is our last mistake in chapter two. And I have a feeling there'll be a chapter three, but this one's important.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is exactly what Wendy said. Email isn't your job. Your job is writing the code or managing the projects, seeing the patients, paying the accounts, working with customers, and so on and so forth. The majority of your day should be spent on those activities, not doing email, quote unquote, right? Letting email take over your workday is the sign of poor work or workload management.
And what's more, as this is something else we say fairly frequently, Parkinson's law and Horseman's corollary. Thank you. Apply. The more time you give email, the more time it will take. If you send an email and you stay in your email box, there will be a reply which you will then want to reply to. And you'll have this ping back and forwards in minutes, and then an hour will go by and all you've done is email.
Mm-hmm.
When you reduce the amount of time you give to email, it will take less time. And I tried to find a different way to word this, but I can't. Email is literally an inbox. And I know it says inbox on your email, but it's a source. It's a place where tasks come in, where information comes in, and where trash comes in. Those are the three types of stuff you have coming into your inbox. Just like those are the three things you have coming into your mailbox. You go get your mail. There's letters you want. There's letters you have to answer to. There's letters that are information, and there's trash. That's all that's there. So what you need to do is the same as what you do with your physical mail. You sort it, and you put the tasks on one pile, and you put them on your task list. The information, you say, okay, I'm going to read it and file it, or I'm going to read it and trash it. And then the trash, you trash. That's the action that you need to do with email. It's not all of the actions that are tasks in the email.
Yeah. If you're familiar with David Allen and getting things done, you can use David Allen's rules for processing your inbox. And one of them, which is a brilliant one, is if it takes less than 2 minutes, then you just answer it right then. But otherwise, answering email should come into the block of time that you've allocated for answering emails or working on X project to which the email refers, not during the vague, defined but really undefined time of quote unquote doing email.
If you imagine going to the mailbox and getting a check, like you go to the mailbox, you pick up a stack of mail, you come back into the kitchen and you start sorting through the mail, and there's a pile of trash, there's a pile of just information, and there's a pile of things that's usually like one letter that is to do. And one of them is a check, and you think, I need to pay that check in. Unless you have one of those apps on your phone where you just take a photograph and you can do that in less than 2 minutes, you probably need to go somewhere and find the checkbook with the paying in slip and fill out the paying in slip and put it in an envelope and put a stamp on it and so on. You don't do that while you're standing in the kitchen sorting the mail. So why do you do it when you do it with your email? It doesn't make any sense.
It's a great point. It's a really good point.
So there might not be a class on email. I think we've just given it. But there's no reason for us to be making stupid mistakes when stupid mistakes are because we don't know what else to do or we're just not thinking through our own actions. And email is something we do a lot. And so effective emailing has a huge influence on the results that you get. If you can be effective at email and reduce the amount of time it takes and be respond in a timely fashion and send messages in a way that people can understand them easily, your results go up exponentially because it's such a big part of your day. It's like when people say about paying off debt and they say, oh, you shouldn't go to Starbucks. But Starbucks is like, I don't know, $10 each time you go. Now, if you're going 10 times a day, obviously that's a big amount. But if you can, I don't know, halve your car insurance, which is $1,000, that's a much bigger effect. And so don't worry about Starbucks, go for the insurance. This is the same thing. Email is such a big part of most people's days. If you can make it effective, you'd have a really big effect on the amount of other time you have and the results that you get and the relationships that you have, which is huge.
Absolutely. Well said.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.